This is 1360 AM.
WNJC. Washington Township. Philadelphia. Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station. Brought to you from Forsyth Broadcasting. Or listen to us at WNJCRadio.com.
Hemingway coming to you live every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 p.m. on WNJC 1360. Now, if you wish to call in, most of the times on the show we get overloaded and we can't really take callers. Tonight I wanted to kind of leave it a little loose, make it topical. If it doesn't fit, then we're going to cut you. But we're going to give everybody a couple of 1 or 2 minutes and to give some input. Once I get through my base of the idea of the show today I'm going to actually veer a little left. I was planning on doing survival as a team sport, but in light of an experience I had just the other day, I'm going to delve first into some vehicle survival and parking lot survival and whatnot. So I'm going to start out with that. We're going to kind of roll a little bit to give you a taste for next week for survival being a team sport. I gave a class up in North Jersey the other day, and we had a really nice turnout, about 35, 40 people, I think, did a situational awareness class. If you need a situational awareness class done for what your company or your business or organization, you can email me at will@practicepreparedness.com, and I can set up some kind of a deal for you for me to come out and give the class. Depending upon how big and extreme you want it, we have 3 or 4 people who are skilled enough to put that all together in addition to me. So let's talk first about some vehicle survival. So I've talked about it before in some cursory level. One of the things to consider is that because the weather changes, each time that the weather changes, you need to be able to have a kit with you in the car or the truck, whatever that you drive, and that will be attributed to the weather conditions current at that time of year. So when we switch from summer to winter, it's time to go from warm weather type apparatus to extreme cold weather, because you know that if anything can happen for it to be extreme, it will when you're least expecting it. So in your vehicle, you should have things, basic things, like the ability to change your own tire. And if you can't change your own tire, then you should have the things in your vehicle so you can beg someone else who can to do it for you, because you may not be able to get someone to come and get you. Certainly during the holidays that have just passed, there was a 3 to 4 hour wait for AAA to come out. That really stinks if you're in snow or extreme cold or rain and you're stuck out there. Plus, if you're in a bad neighborhood, being able to get out, do it, and get back in your car and go beats the heck out of being stuck in a place where it's unsafe. So some of the other things you need to have with you then are not one, but 2, preferably or more, wool blankets. And then I like the heavy-duty packing blankets that have a polyfill in them, because they're generally duck cloth on the outside, which means that they'll repel water. You can even spray them with a waterproof, like the one of the sprays like 3M or Campmore or any of those, so that then if you had a broken window or if the vehicle was seriously damaged and open to the weather, you would be able to make sure that you'd stay warm and not get hypothermia while you're waiting for someone to come help you. Then we get into the bigger problems, like parking lot survival. When you go into a place like Walmart or a mall or any place that has a parking lot where a lot of people come to go shopping, they're commonly distracted. They are in positions where they're not actually paying attention to who's coming from some directions. They're very assumptive. They back out of a parking spot without looking, or they may have gotten in their vehicle and there was no one behind them, and a minute or two later they don't look, they just go back. If you are on foot or if you're in a vehicle, then you have to be paying attention to them double, because being right and being run over is not going to make any good for you. No matter how right you are, you're still going to be in the hospital or worse. So don't leave yourself in that position. If you can, back your vehicle into the parking spot, because your vehicle is designed so that you can see forward, left, and right unobstructedly. The rear is not designed for that. And in fact, some of the cars over the years have been so poorly designed that they got a really bad reputation because you couldn't see out the back window. That said, we get to the big one. And the big one is surviving a car accident. So the other day, I had someone decide, well, it was snowing out and I was out for a drive coming back from somewhere down in the boondocks in the Elmer area. And I was on a really nice backcountry road, straight as an arrow, no obstructions, nice snowing, lightly snowing, everything was white and all the trees looked all flocked and pretty. And a guy that was in front of me decided to turn right, and then at the last minute, without looking or signaling, turned left while I was only a car length and a half from him, and turned perpendicular right in front of me. I'm thankful that no one got hurt, but it could have been really bad. He was in a car and I was in my Jeep, and my Jeep has a heavy duty bumper on the front for the winch, so it saved my vehicle from any fascia damage, but it didn't save from the rest of what came with it, because anytime that you get into an impact where you come to a stop or an abrupt stop within a few seconds, it will do quite a big amount of damage to your body that you may not immediately recognize. So the first thing you should realize is that over the years, there have been hundreds and hundreds of studies, some very serious ones, by the Department of Transportation. There was one that studied 1970 to 1996, and there has been a couple since then, but the one that covered that era was really, really heavy duty on how it affected people in the psychological side. And you have to realize that if you are in a position where you are in an accident, it plays with a person's mind unless you are really, really well trained. So what happens immediately after that is that people do strange things. Sometimes they run out in the road. I've seen when I was as an EMS, when I was on scenes after car accidents, even 5-10 minutes, people walking in circles in the highway in the middle of the road, because they're so stunned. And each person's psyche, depending on how strong or how weak they are, minded-wise, will react quite amazingly differently. The other thing that I find, too, is that people will get mass guilt. Even when they're not responsible, they will act guilty because they feel bad that they survived and someone else was seriously injured or worse. And all of these things bring on things like depression, bring on all kinds of other things. It damages their ability to work. It damages their ability to be functional after that in ways that cannot be shown on a medical chart when they walk into the hospital immediately after the accident, and also will not be identifiable when they go to look for something if there's a lawsuit or some kind of need for simply under PIP, under the personal injury protection, to get compensated while they're out of work, because it's very difficult to delineate what someone is really experiencing and that which they're milking it, because unfortunately there are people who will do that. And then you get the other ones who I tend to fall into that category where I'm going, it's fine, I'm fine, I got this. And then a week later you find out that your shoulder's messed up or your knee is messed up or you broke a foot or anything. I actually broke my several bones in my foot in an accident when I was struck in the rear a while back. I did not even know it. I never went to the hospital because I'm not a wimp, so I didn't go. I have a very high pain threshold, so I didn't go. And then afterwards, when everyone said I was an idiot, and I said, why would I go? And then 4 months later, I was going, yeah, I guess I should have gone. So if you get in an accident, if you have any discomfort or any pain, you should allow them, unless it's a minor fender bender, you should allow them to check you out. Even if you take yourself to the hospital to be checked out and you tell them immediately that you're there because of an MVA, motor vehicle accident, it is really important. Because if not, you will not get proper care because they won't be able to even identify. Forget legalities and insurance and all that. You won't get care because they won't know how to determine the source of your problem. When it's immediate, they can see things like subluxations and dislocations of major joints. They can find these things right then. And they won't see them a week later, but they'll know that they existed, which then goes downline. Sometimes people can go a few times to a chiropractor and be okay. But if they wait 6 months, the way that the muscles stress and strain will pull their spine out of line, it'll pull their arm or their leg out of alignment, their knee, and could bring on all kinds of other things. Amazingly to me, they found that 25% of the people who were surveyed that were involved in accidents between the 1970 and 1996 qualified under the criteria of having PTSD. I find this appalling because it's not that I don't believe they got PTSD from it. It's that of them, only 22% of them involved a serious injury causing hospitalization overnight. If that's the case, what kind of a soft world and people do we have that they can't deal with life's general risks and complexities that we get challenged by every day? And this is where we go to being prepared. If you put in your mindset, you've got to know. If you're prepared, you've got to be an idiot to think that you can drive and drive more than from the house to the grocery store and back on a regular basis, that at some point or another, you're not going to get in an accident. And if you get into the accident, you need to know how to handle yourself. So there are certain things you can do. I was actually working on writing a section for the website, rewriting it from my old one. I haven't quite finished it yet. But essentially, you need to take on the mentality once you make sure that everything's okay. If you're functional, if you can get up and walk, then the next thing that you need to do is to immediately start making notes. If you have a camera, almost everybody does now because most people have a smartphone or they have some kind of a phone that has a camera, better a crappy photo than no photo. If the vehicles are there in the roadway and they're in the order and in the position where they came to rest, get some long shots of it. Take some shots of the front and rear and do yourself a favor, get a shot of the damage on the other person's car. You'll still have yours. You won't have theirs. I dealt with an incident in 1983, I believe it was, where a person struck multiple times because the pedestrian bounced off the ground, and then the woman hit her again and then bounced off the ground again and struck her sideways, glanced her with the car for the third time. She took the car home, they hit it, and then I went and snuck over in the middle of the night, lifted up the tarp they had on it and took pictures of it and then ran away. And 5 months later, in the first deposition on the case, they showed up with pictures where the car looked like it had been smashed into a brick wall. They did all kinds of other things to it, and then they tried covering up. They changed it, and I provided them with pictures that had a time date on it that blew it out. If you don't have the pictures, you will not have that opportunity. The other thing is that by taking long shots, you can get pictures of where the debris from the cars were, so that that can be used later to put it back together if you ever need, with a person who's a trained accident investigator who can use software, who can plot, who can look at the trajectories, who can look at where it would have fallen when it got hit and where it would have come to rest to reconstruct. Even if you were in the wrong, and sometimes even more so, because they will adjust in their favor to make you really wrong. And the other side of the coin is that you may be able to show or demonstrate something you didn't even realize in the heat of the moment, but was the reason that you did what you did. And that gets to something else. I am a big advocate of having a dash cam. If you think that not having a dash cam is a good idea because you're afraid that it's going to incriminate you, then all I've got to say is stop doing something that's going to incriminate you. No one will ever be perfect. No one. No driver is expected to be perfect. The fact of the matter is, imagine if you were driving along and a kid did what's known in the industry as a dart out, where he comes from between two vehicles on a bicycle or running, chasing a ball, something like that. And in an instant, they're in front of you and you're only 10 feet away. There's no way on God's green earth that you're gonna stop. The most you can maybe do is pull hard to the opposite side to get away from them to minimize the damage. Now you have a new set of problems. You just struck two cars on the other side parked on the street, or two cars on the other side who were coming and you head on them to avoid hitting a pedestrian. And immediately they're going to say, you were unlawfully driving on the wrong side of the road, you're responsible, and you're bad, and this is going to find against you and in their favor. The problem is, well, yes, you struck them. There's a reason why you did. And when they look at your responsibility in court, which always happens on a major, especially a pedestrian motor vehicle accident, they're going to be looking for why you struck them and give them a darn good reason why they shouldn't consider you to be totally and wholly responsible and the worst person on earth. If you have video, you can play it back and the timing will be evident. And the ability for any normal human being only then becomes a matter of discussion as to whether you reacted quickly enough and what the average responses are for humans. This is critical because you must realize that, as I said this in one of the first shows, if you don't realize the fact that one mistake, and I mean a mistake, not a I was being stupid, holding the cell phone, texting, not looking up, looking down like a guy was next to me the other day. I was driving to North Jersey. I couldn't believe on the turnpike at like 70 miles an hour, he's passing me as I'm in the 65 mile an hour area, and he blows by me and he has his phone on the steering wheel, and he's clearly texting, has one hand holding the steering wheel on the phone and the other hand tapping on the text. If you were to hit someone and do that and you're afraid of them getting you for doing it, then you should think about not doing it in the first place. But imagine if that guy was coming past you and hit you and then later claims that you veered in front of him. Because this is what happens. People have very, very poor recall. When I've done investigations in places, I did one, I have commented about it before, in a bank, there were 134 people in the bank on a Friday afternoon when it was armed robbed. That was employees and customers in downtown Chicago. And a police officer who was off duty in the place, was shot in the face and killed by the perpetrator. And the people in the building were interviewed, and not a single one of those 134 people, A, even close to accurately identified the perpetrator or a single one of the actions that he took. And furthermore, they got his height, his weight, his race, and his clothing completely wrong. He used a shotgun, and over half of the witnesses said he had a pistol. This is how human minds work. They're not paying attention, but they don't want to admit that they were the only one in the room who didn't see. So people backfill. And the mistake that the police made, which is a common one, is that they allowed the witnesses to all sit together and commiserate before they interviewed each one of them. And why is this a problem? Because when you do that, immediately one says, oh, did you see this? And they're the more dominant one in the group. And the other ones argues, and they're dominant too. And they start arguing about what they saw, and they disagree. And then the other ones who are more submissive will step back and go, oh, I guess I didn't remember that right, and adopt one of their versions, removing any hope for getting any viable information from the witnesses. And this is critical, because if you don't, then you lose. So we can then turn that information and that experiential data into something for you when you're dealing with your own accident. That means immediately do not discuss what happened with anyone. If you have a way to record, I highly recommend, like I use an Android, I use something called Droid Record. It's really high quality. It was free. I got it on the Android, and I use it, and I can record like I'm holding a digital recorder and talk into it, and real quickly do 1 or 2 minutes while you're waiting for someone to come, or turn it on while you're walking around going, are you all right? Are you all right? And just have it in your hand. And they say, yeah, I'm fine. Oh, I can't believe I did that. Because now you have that too. But more importantly, it will help you recall accurately afterward. And the moment that you sit down, which by the way, if you end up at the hospital, if you have any chance of an injury, excuse me, then you should be at the hospital. That means that you are guaranteed that you are going to have hours of sitting with your thumb in your ear, waiting to be seen. Take a piece of paper. If you don't have one, ask them for a piece of paper and borrow a pen. And sit there and write every single detail of what you can think of. It does not even have to be in order. When I teach investigators how to do a report, an incident report, when they've been there, or people how to do an incident report in their store or their business, I always tell them this: forget order. You are not going for penmanship award, and you're not going to be graded. The only grade you're going to get is that you get the information right, and it helps you get the proper outcome. And how well or how poorly you do will determine that outcome. So do the best you can. So put down everything as it comes to you, even if it's in reverse order or out of order, little tidbits. Leave a space, go to another, go on, do it again. And then later you can combine it all back into something that's legible and understandable. This is critical, because if you do this, the little details will start to file out, and you will begin afterwards to recall. This is why when I go into court to testify on a case, I have investigators' notes from the moment that I got involved, whether it was right after the incident, during the incident, or long after when I interview the person. Whatever it is, I start from there, and I have investigators' notes as well as reports and documents and whatnot, so that when I get there, it may be court, maybe a year, 2 years later, I can walk in, read them, and it will flow back into my head like it happened yesterday. The difference, though, is that if someone wants to cross-examine you for the facts and bring question as to whether you're accurate or not, you can have absolution in knowing that you are as accurate as you can humanly be from your perception. And that's where we get to another thing. Sometimes the attorneys will say, never say anything. When they get there, when right after the accident, never say anything. Don't take fault. Don't do anything. Just say nothing. This is dubiously questionable because if you have integrity, you do what you know is right. The problem is, this is the threat to you if someone is playing by that game. If you are in the right, but the person who was in the wrong refuses to say so or admit it, you are then going to be in a mess. Because in most states, like New Jersey, they will declare it as a no-fault accident. It's going to go against yours, and they're going to go against theirs, and everybody's going to get hit for it. At least if you are not, at least if you have the information gathered enough to prove your side of it and prevail, at least you can come out ahead of the game. But if you just leave it to the police officer, who got there, what, 5, 10, 15 minutes? For my case the other day, I had a state trooper who had to come from Delaware because he had chased someone over the line when he got the call. And he had to come all the way from Delaware to there. It was 20 minutes. That accident scene could have altered 100 ways from Sunday if it was a busy street. But because it was in the country, the fire engines and everything were there, it didn't make that much of a difference to the scene. But imagine if you were in the city. People pick up things and steal them off of accident scenes. I've seen it happen. So whatever you do, the first thing you should do is take pictures. Because you may see in the picture later things you didn't even cognizantly identify at the time because of the chaos of the situation. I'm going to post on the site tomorrow or tonight a diagram and an accident reporting kit that was developed by the Tulane University, and it's a really, really great, perfectly comprehensive little pamphlety thing. You can print out a few of them, fold it up, throw a pen in it, and put it into your glove box. If you have an accident, start filling it out. There is always untold amount of long, droning moments of sitting around waiting for you to be the next one talked to, or waiting for the tow truck to get there, or waiting for the police to get there, or something that you can utilize in instantaneous time period after the accident, where if you go to answer them and you say, gee, I don't really know, you can get out and go look, and then fill it in. So you're going to see that on there. You can download it. I'm going to put it up on the site tonight probably. So look for that. It is a driver's accident reporting kit. You could and should consider looking at a place like CVS or go online. Find a couple of those disposable digital cameras. They're really great. The nice thing about them is, unlike the old ones where it was film, if you have it in your glove box, it doesn't matter if it gets to 130 or 40 degrees in your car in the summer, it'll still work. Because in the old ones, the film would go bad. Yeah. And if it got too cold in the winter, it wouldn't work either. You can warm it up a little bit, hopefully, and it should work fine. But the beauty of that is you can walk around and just go click, 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 and take pictures. And I recommend that there should not be a single unused shot on those cameras so that you can have as much as you possibly can of the accident scene and the lay of the land there so that you can use it in your defense in order to help you later on, because you just never know what people will turn around and do. I remember doing a case in the early 2000s, and a person had been involved in a motor vehicle accident. The third vehicle, who was the originator of the incident, killed the person in the second vehicle because they were changing their tire. Really? On the side of the road. And then as he realized that he had struck someone, he veered into my client. He claimed my client hit him and forced him to strike the person. This is again where a dash cam comes in handy. And my recommendation, based on the fact that a very close friend of mine just gifted me one the other day, which thank God I had just replaced my old crappy one, it has 130-degree view in the front. That's pretty big. That's a pretty broad, wide angle. And in the rear, it has 140. So the same camera does splits, and it does inside of the vehicle and outside of the vehicle. So you get front, and you get inside of the cabin. And I'll tell you what, here's the thing. The first question they asked me was not, did I have a seatbelt on when the adjuster contacted me? The first question they asked was, were you using a cell phone? Mm-hmm. To which I said, no, I wasn't, although I have hands free. Right. No, I was not. She said, were there any witnesses to that? I said, two. So here's the thing. When you have the ability to prove, then all you have to do is keep reminding yourself, if you have any desire to be stupid, remember that camera is recording you. There's an old saying that I used to use all the time, which is that in the corporate investigative side, when I teach people risk management and loss prevention in a business, I tell them, look, I am your best friend as long as you're not a thief. Because if you have a problem, I'll be the first one there to help you. Right. And if not, then this is your opportunity to know that I am not a trained monkey, and I am probably going to pose the biggest threat to you possible if you do something wrong. So this might be the impetus for you to turn over a new leaf if you are bad and become a really stellar good person, because you know that it's going to really stink if you do something wrong, because I'm going to catch you. And that's the deal. So you can use the camera the same way. It will remind you every time you look up when it's there, and position it, by the way, if you get one, position it so it's slightly behind your mirror so it is not an obstruction to your view. Okay. Put it as high as you can, but below the stripe of the tinting, if you have a tinting stripe in your windshield. Okay. Most people don't know this. But the problem is, some of the car the car dash cams have IR lights to help see in the dark. Stay away from those cams. The reason for that is they're only using the IRs because the camera itself does not have low light capability. And that means that it's 100% dependent on those IRs, the infrared lights, to light and illuminate the scene. Well, here's the problem. Have you ever used a camera with a flash inside the window to take a picture of outside?
Yeah.
What do you get in the picture?
The flash.
The flash?
Yeah.
And yourself?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so like it a reflection. Means nothing.
Right.
Absolutely nothing. And if you remember that, you realize why you don't want a camera that uses infrared lights to be able to see in the dark. You want a camera that actually has low light capability.
Okay.
So this is something people don't think about. Then your next problem is, it's how much light is getting to the lens. If your camera is looking through the tinting strip, you have just taken away up to 3/4 of the light that it's going to see. It's like putting sunglasses on the camera, because that's essentially what the tinting strip across the top of the windshield does. So think about these things. It has to be just below the tinting strip, as close to the, preferably as close to the mirror as possible, so that it doesn't block your view. Also, that way you won't knock it down with your visors and such when you go to use them, or interface with it to knock them. Then comes another interesting thing. Most of the high-end cams, which, by the way, on Amazon you can now get them for around $70 for a two-way, one-in, one-out, 1080p, they also offer to record audio. And this can get really interesting.
Okay.
Now, most of them have a privacy button on them. And my opinion is, look at it, fiddle with it, test it, take out the chip out of it, and go play it back so that you learn how it works, what failed and what didn't, before you get in an accident like I did, and know that it's working so that when something does happen, you don't go, crap, it didn't work. I can't believe it. If only, if I coulda, woulda, shoulda, don't get there. Now, the beauty also of it is that if you think that you're going to have any problems, you can push the privacy button and put it on private. But if you have an interaction with law enforcement on the highway, and they stop you or they come to you and it's running and you take privacy off, you now have a recording of the statement you gave to them and a recording of their comments back to you. This can be unbelievably useful.
Right.
This is not something you want to go put in somebody's face. This is something you may have to give to someone who's helping protect you and say, here's exactly what happened. And then from there, they can get to meet, because people, like I said, have poor recollection. They could have gotten distracted. They could get confused who you are and then misreport. There are lots of things that happen. The other thing that can happen too is that there's cronyism that is inevitable, especially in small towns, where, like in my instance, the really great thing is it was a state trooper. They're highly reliable. They're extremely professional. And no knock on local police departments, but because local is more attuned to local people, there's a higher likelihood of strange behaviors when one of the people involved is someone well known to them, liked, etc. And you want to do everything to put things in your favor, so you want to be very courteous and you want to be very cooperative, but you also want to make sure that you can accurately recall and prove what happened. This is why you want the photos. This is why you want to have the audio if you can get it, so that you have these things, so that if nothing else, you can accurately recall. So before I go any further, I want to remind you about our sponsor, MacServe, and they are MacServ. They are based in Belmar, New Jersey. They serve the tri-state area, Delaware, New Jersey, Philadelphia area. Their phone number is 888-818-MACS. You can hit them via email at info@MacServe. That's MacServ.com. They're really specialized in doing managed care for businesses who utilize especially Apple products. They do it broad-ranged, but their specialty is Apple hardware and software. If you have an operation with graphic arts or anything else that your operation runs on and uses any type of Apple equipment, you really need to give my friend Sam a call over at MacServe at 888-818-MACS, and talk to him, because they do not only help desk and application support, and they do daily backup monitoring and maintenance. They do ongoing diagnostics and maintenance, and they put in systems so that you don't have to worry any day about how it is. They'll do flat rate deals. And their managed care support system works with reduced rate pricing, hourly rate pricing. So you should really give them a call if you're utilizing Apple products. They can make them sing for you. That's, again, 888-818-MACS, and tell Sam that Will sent you. So, all right, we're back with Practice Preparedness and your host, Will Hemingway. So let's talk a little bit more about this with the car accident, because really critical that you recognize that any kind of an accident, and remember, in the law, for good reason, the moment that you wake up in the morning and you step your feet out of bed, you immediately begin taking on liability. Everything you do, you're liable for. Even the things you didn't intend to do, but you created a cause for, you will be liable for. The question becomes, if you ever cross that line where you become negligent, which is a criminal act in many cases, your liability increases exponentially. The problem is sometimes you didn't do something with negligence, but people will imply you did it with negligence. The only way that you can go around that is by being prepared, so that when you get to that point, if someone were to indicate that, you yourself could actually protect yourself with facts. Remember, Lying is not going to help you because sooner or later it's going to come out. There's an old saying, one lie begat a thousand. That is the game. You want to be right. Unfortunately, if you've done wrong, then you really most likely want to, if, unless it's minor, you just want to say, look, I'm going to have to talk to someone before I can talk to you, and leave it at that. The problem is that you want the truth to come out, but you don't want some adjusted version of it when people abuse it. And that's the key. Whatever you do, do not leave the scene of the accident. On the other hand, people have a big misunderstanding. If you're on a highway like 295, the Turnpike, Schuylkill Expressway, places like that, and there's a lot of traffic and a lot of high-speed traffic, the law is very clear. In 99% of the cases, unless there's a fatality, you pull the vehicle off the road to a safe spot as close to the incident as possible. If there is a place you can pull into to off of the roadway within a few feet, do that. But the key is, if you can safely get some pictures of the vehicles in their originally stopped position first, do it. Don't step out into the traffic to do it, though. And I know it sounds silly, but we live in a world where, unfortunately, for good reason, we have to put stickers on things like, don't drop a lit match in this gas can. Yeah. Don't eat this dog. Don't put this knife in your eye. Wow. Don't try to pick your nose with these scissors. This is the world we live in because people are morons. But unfortunately, this is the case. So I have seen people. I was on a scene, back way before the cell phones and all that, back in the late 70s as a fireman. Standing in a very heavily traveled four-lane road during rush hour, we had a really bad accident, and a guy gets out of the car, walks over, stands in traffic, and takes a shot, and two cars veered into each other and crashed into each other and hit our fire truck.
Wow.
And we wished that he had been taking the pictures of him making the cars hit the fire truck, because then we could have had them. Unfortunately, it predated the time of having dash cams and all that. But nowadays, if you are in that kind of an industry and you don't have a dash cam, then you're hurting yourself. I have one in the front and in the rear of my vehicle so that I can see both ends. Because to me, that's critical. Because you never know what's going to happen. You just never know. And then it rolls over. And that's, by the way, the beauty with these dash cams is they're FIFO, first in, first out. They record, and then when it finally fills whatever recording media you have, it rolls over and starts erasing the oldest part. So this is why, let me spell it out to you. If you're going to use a dash cam, this is what you need. 2 chips, identical. You immediately remove the first chip from the camera and place the second one in the camera. Leave the dash cam running, because while they're fiddling with your vehicle, while they put it on the wrecker, while they move it, while they talk about you, while you're not there, you are recording everything. But if you are afraid that your accident footage will be run over, you will be tempted to do what I did yesterday, which was yank the camera and shut it off so that it didn't disappear. This is critical. So this way, you have the chip that has the data from the accident, and the other, if you lose it, the world doesn't end, but if you get it, you win. Because there's lots of things. In my situation, they were taking my passenger out of the vehicle on a stretcher. The entire episode was recorded in all of its glory.
Wow.
Complete. Wow. Technicolor and sound. All the glory of that moment that will live on in infamy forever. So you have to remember that everything is being recorded.
Yeah.
So it will alter, hopefully, the way you behave in the car from the moment on that you are in a vehicle where you know you are recording it, it will alter in a good way the way you behave. And if that happens, all the better. But in the end, it will save you lots of ag. I cannot stress enough how critically important it is to remember that these things you can decide to be not involved and to be completely unprepared, and you will end up, trust me, paying the consequences. By the way, if there's any reason of any type or reason that you can think of that the other person involved is inebriated, you need to ask the police officer on the scene to immediately check the other person, because it's too late once they have left the scene. And that is critical, because after mine, I started thinking about it, and after someone talked about it, I had not thought about that. In this case, I don't know if it mattered or not, but I'll tell you that I know a lot of people who have been involved in incidents who later they found out that the person was inebriated, but it was too late to prove it. The other thing is, if there is no ticket given on site, it will immediately be treated as a no-fault accident. In a state like New Jersey, they could have cut into you, stopped in front of you, rolled over in front of you, and it will still be considered a no-fault if there was no ticket given on the scene. So remember that, because it's really crucial in the big picture. If you know they were speeding and they just passed you, if you know that they were swerving and veered, then these are things to tell them, because if they caused the accident with you, then you need to do that. The other thing is, if they slid into you or they hit you, then you need to look at things like tire conditions and weather conditions. And all these things get written into that sheet that I told you that I'll be posting about the conditions of the highway, conditions of visibility. Mm-hmm. I had someone yesterday pass me, I think it was yesterday, the day before, pass me, and there was snow on their windshield. They had a 6x6 hole scraped in front of the driver. Can you imagine? It was iced up with snow on their windshield, and they were going on a highway at 50 miles an hour. All I could think to myself is, if someone didn't see them coming, or if someone was already in the road and they didn't notice because they had such a myopic view of their direction, and they struck them, they could kill them. A person on the street walking or out of their car, they're dead. Do not be irresponsible. All these things have everything to do with being prepared. You can save your life of destruction, of having your world destroyed by one moment that you make a mistake. No text, no phone call, no anything is as important as getting to the other end without having an incident. And I know it's not as simple as that when you look around you and you see people driving with a hamburger in one hand and the soda in the other and their pinkies on the steering wheel. While their cell phone is pinched in their neck next to their head while they're driving down the road, which I've actually seen. In the world that we live in, people have gotten so comfortable in their vehicle that they think that it's just like riding along on their sofa waiting to get to the other end. You have to remember, do you know what happens to you? Have you looked at your insurance? And this is another thing. Have you looked at, and I don't claim to be an insurance specialist, but if you call your insurance agent and talk to them about it, have you looked at your insurance? If you have an older car, do you have collision? If you don't, do you understand that unless it's 100% on the other person, you're likely not going to get a cent, and even after they were wrong, you'll end up with no vehicle? Do you understand that if the damage to them personally, their physical personal, and they end up in court and sue you, that if they win $1 million and you're carrying the minimum coverage, which I think is $45,000 on average for personal liability, that means the rest of that money is going to get garnished out of your wages for the rest of your life. How long will it take you to earn $1 million minus $45,000? Do you know what your life will be like? anyone out there listening who has ever gotten divorced and has had to pay child support, that's one-tenth of the headache of what happens if you end up running into someone. And if you're drinking, or if you don't, do you know that in most jurisdictions, if you don't have a seatbelt on and the law requires you to have a seatbelt, that if they write you for not having a seatbelt on, that you immediately are 100% responsible because you were ticketed and did not, and you were breaking the law. Because if you get in an accident, well, you're breaking the law. And mind you, there are some caveats to that and adjustments. But basically speaking, if you are committing a crime and while it happens, even if you are in the right, you will be hit. And you will be held responsible. And this means things like people steal a car and they get in an accident. Even when it was someone else's fault, they're hit. You're speeding, you get the ticket for speeding, you're going to be the one responsible. Remember, because this is critical, if they write you a ticket for being on the cell phone while you are, when you're in an accident, you are going to be the one who is committing a crime when that happened. And these things can completely alter your life, because imagine the damage. Let's say it's easy, a little one, only 100 grand. And what is, do you know what yours is, Eddie, on your car? Do you know what your insurance coverage is for liability, personal injury?
No, I don't. Mm-mm.
So
I probably should find out, though.
Right.
I mean, like,
so
yeah.
Do you know that the difference between, say, and it depends on the state, some can go as low as 15,000.
Right.
That the difference between 15 and 50 can be as low as $100 a half.
Well, I know, because that was originally my grandmom's car. I know when my grandmom had it, it was like 25, something mm-hmm. like that. But I don't know how it's changed, because she told me it changed mm-hmm. from when what she had 5 years ago. Since it's mine now, maybe the insurance went up or down or whatever.
Right, well, this is not the cost, but it's about what the coverage levels are.
Right.
And most people say, oh, good, give me the cheapest I can get, good. When you get to the end of it, though, it's really bad.
Yeah.
Because now you get in a situation where you are really in trouble, because imagine, like for you, you're young. You could spend the next 20 years of your life paying someone for having gotten injured because you slid in the rain. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, you were driving. Yes, you're responsible. This is how it is. But in the end, if they sue you and it exceeds the payout, exceeds what it is that they're going to get from your insurance, they're going to come after your personal property and anyone else. And by the way, that's the last thing on this point that I want to make, is that, do you know, think about this. If you have children out there who are over the age of 18 and they have a driver's license, if they have a car, put it in their name. Put the insurance in their name. Do you know why? Because if they're stupid and they're disrespectful, or they do something where they're not being careful and they kill someone,
right,
it's coming back on you. If they're driving your car but they're an insured on your insurance policy, they will come for the deepest pocket. They will come for you, because it will be your vehicle. You will have given them the approval to drive your vehicle, and it will hit you. Put their car on their name, even if you have to help pay or pay for the insurance, put them on their own policy. Put the vehicle in their name, because if you do not, you will pay the consequences. It is beyond belief the things that people don't know about and how radically they can alter your life. Do yourself a favor. And people will say, oh, what does this have to do with preparedness and survival? I don't know. I'd like to spend the next 20 years not paying for someone else and use the money to pay for myself. So remember, you can never lay back. You can never get comfortable when you know that every week they're going to take something from you for something that happened in 15 seconds 20 years ago, or 15 or 10 years ago. Do yourself a favor. Be prepared by being careful, by being aware, by doing everything you can to avoid or minimize an accident. Remember, your car can be replaced. If it's a person, do what you can to avoid it. Even if it means hitting a pole.
Right.
Even if it means striking a parked car. Better to deal with a struck parked car and your car getting mangled than running over someone in the road, even if it was their fault. And again, this is why having a camera is useful, because later on you can play it back for them and say, yes, I hit the car, but my choice was to strike and kill a human or strike an inanimate object. What would you have done?
Right.
And that's the key. So that's our primary topic today. We burned almost all the time off already. But there are a couple other things I wanted to touch on. In the class I was giving last week, there were a couple, or the other day, I was interacting with some of the people who were attending the location when I gave the class, and I had some interesting conversations with them, and I came across some preppers who were reminding me why I make such a big deal to separate the difference between prepping, survivalism, and preparedness. So here's the thing. Remember, I'm not saying that every person who identifies himself as a prepper is a kook. Right. What I am simply saying is, what you may not realize because you think you identify yourself as a prepper, is that being prepared is hopefully what comes out of being a prepper. But being prepared has to do with a long-sighted vision. And when I was talking to someone there, I was struck and reminded by something as I moved further and further away from that I had forgotten, which was that a lot of preppers focus on an individual singular threat to the survival of them and or the society, civilization as it is. Could be a CME, a coronal mass ejection, it could be an earthquake or a tsunami or a flood, or it could be civil unrest or martial law or whatever the case may be. The problem is every single day we are challenged by something, a car accident, stay in the hospital, whatever it is. Being prepared changes the element for in that from being a victim to being in charge. So a little point and perspective to put this all together is that if you sit back for 5 minutes, and I'm going to actually write up a little piece that's going to go on there onto the site, but think about this. You can get a little pouch, a butt pack. You can even probably find one in the dollar store. Doesn't have to be fancy. And in it, you put a tablet, a couple of pens, and a couple of pencils, because sometimes the pens won't write if it's too cold and whatnot. Put in the camera. Put in at least $10 of $1 bills and a roll of quarters. And put in some basics, like put in information. It would be a really good idea if you had a chip, like a flash drive, that you put a scan of your driver's license, a scan of your current insurance card, a scan of your registration for the vehicle. Because you can ask them in the hospital, you can even ask the police officer, if something happens to displace them, to poke it into their computer and pull it up on their computer. So why the money? Because if you're sitting in the hospital, they had me sit in that hospital from 4:30 until 1 a.m. in the morning. Never ever offered me a bottle of water or anything to eat in that entire period of time. There were vending machines in a locked area outside of the patient area. They offered me to go there, and guess what? It didn't take fives and it didn't take tens. And what if you didn't have any cash? You're screwed. So do yourself a favor, make up the little butt pack, toss it into your glove box or your console, so that if an accident happens and they're gonna take you to the hospital, you tell them if you can't do it. Get my little bag out of the car. Find an orange one. It'll even help them find it better. Put it in, clip it to the gurney, strap it to your waist, do whatever. Put it on as a headband, but it'll be with you so that when you need it, you will have it. Because people get there, they may cut your jacket off. They may cut your pants off. What are you going to do then? You're going to be there. You won't have anything. Do yourself a favor. So the thought to leave you with is, there is no disaster when you are prepared. And the way you do that is to remove the mantle of victimhood and take control of your world. stuff happens. Don't wait for it to happen to go, darn, I wish I coulda, woulda, shoulda. And that's the key. So from me, Will Hemingway, your host, and Practice Preparedness, I say to you, be safe, be prepared. Go visit us on the website at practicepreparedness.com and our sister sites that you can link to off of there, Practice Self-Reliance. And until next week, we'll see you. Be safe.